And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I think the nation is just starting to settle down after Super Tuesday and finally start to look at some other things going on. We're going to talk both about Super Tuesday and the other things going on. So if you want to call in on any issue, it's like the week in review. Please, please feel free to call in. But America voted, 22 states that is, voted, and it came down, at least in the Democratic race, to a big tie. And I don't know, part of me found that kind of amusing. I sort of thought of myself, I guess, as the stereotypical Democrat, and lo and behold, I am, in the sense that I had a really hard time deciding between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And even though I've endorsed Obama, I must be clear, this is not a head-on, throaty, you've got to vote for Obama or this country's in real trouble endorsement. It just isn't. I would be very happy with Hillary Clinton as my president. I'd be very happy if it were a Clinton-Obama ticket. I still slightly prefer Obama because I think he will do better in the fall. But if you want to vote for Hillary Clinton, I'm not going to knock you. I don't blame you. I just want us all to work together in November. But so we go state by state by state, and really it's amazing. At the end of all this, you look at the delegate count, and they're, what, four delegates apart? I mean, they're still counting in New Mexico, 838, 834. It hardly matters. The Democrats came down to a tie, and I think they understand the benefits of both of our candidates, the vision of Barack Obama, the practicality of Hillary Clinton, the details of Hillary Clinton, the inspiration of Barack Obama. There's just a lot to be said for both of them. And my only hope, my main hope at this point, is despite the fact that while a political junkie that I am, I love the idea of a close race. Just like, heck, you know, sports-minded people love a close basketball or football game because it's exciting and you're not sure who's going to win. I get that. I understand that. I share in that. Part of me is relishing the fact that this race is so close and may go to the convention. But the practical person in me fears it. Again, if I've endorsed Barack Obama, I would be very, very happy if he were to win. But I would also be very happy if Hillary Clinton were to win. My concern, though, is that as they fight to the finish, if it's too close, I don't want it to tear our party apart. So let's keep this in mind over the next 6 months. I think it is going to the convention. I don't think either candidate will concede at this point. They're way too close. We'll just have to see who wins. But whoever wins, I really beg all of you to give him or her or him, your full-throated support. We need that. And frankly, I'm worried. A friend of mine who shares many of my political beliefs said today that he felt that John McCain was going to win in November 2008. And I shuddered. And it's not that John McCain would dig us too much deeper than George Bush has dug us. I grant you that. George Bush has dug a bigger hole for the American people than really anybody could. I mean, when you think about it, if a trained monkey had been president, or a small child, or maybe a turtle, they could never have done the damage to this nation that George Bush has done. I mean, merely having no one as president would have been a far, far more prosperous America than having George Bush as president, right? If he just simply left tax rates alone and not transferred money from the poor to the rich, if he simply left the peace alone and not done a preemptive war against a country that never attacked us, we would have 4,000 more living American servicemen and women, 30,000 less wounded. Iraq would be still under the grip of Saddam Hussein, but far better off with more electricity and jobs and benefits than it has now. That doesn't mean it was great under Saddam Hussein. It just would have been better under that than it is now. The world will not hate us as much as it does. George Bush, again, if you put a monkey there, I think there's no question the monkey would have done a better job. Now, John McCain, I think, is not as bad as George Bush. I'll say that right here on the air. But he would not dig us out of the hole. He would dig us a little deeper. Maybe not as quickly and as deeply as George Bush. But any candidate that wants to spend the next 100 years in Iraq at, let's face it, it's cost us $1 trillion so far. It's likely to cost us another trillion or two over the next 4 or 8 years. And that's money that simply should go to Americans. That's money that should go to fixing American bridges, to preparing American levees. I'm not against foreign aid. I support foreign aid. Listen, I would send troops to help save people in Darfur because I believe in sending troops to stop genocide. But spending troops, spending money on, as Ron Paul put it, and I hate to quote Ron Paul, but he's right on this one, to blow up a bridge in Iraq and then rebuild that bridge and then blow it up again. Do you know why it's more peaceful in Iraq now? And peaceful is, of course, the wrong word. I should say less warlike. In other words, you know, hundreds are dying rather than thousands are dying. The reason is because we simply are paying off both sides. That's right. We have given the Shia government, lots of arms and military support. And now we're giving the Sunnis arms and military support. And so they've agreed not to attack us while we're helping arm them for the great civil war they're going to have with the Shia. Is this smart? Is this a goal we want to have? I mean, I'm the first to admit that when we leave, there's going to be some pretty vicious civil war in Iraq. But does helping both sides, arming both sides, does that prevent civil war? No, it just makes it more likely and more deadly the moment we leave. So John McCain would keep us in war in Iraq, spending trillions of dollars. He also would appoint some pretty nasty judges to the Supreme Court. You know, we're already the most conservative Supreme Court probably in American history. We're already two judges more conservative than the court that decided to overrule the American people in 2000 and force their president on us. Yes, I'm worried about that in 08 too. John McCain would cement it. He's already made clear he would overturn Roe v. Wade, which I guess if you're believe that women should be put in jail for having abortions, then you support that, right? But most of us recognize there's too many poor children, too many poor adults, too many people in America in need. Most of us didn't need Katrina, at least those of us here at the Horn, didn't need Katrina to lift the roofs off houses and to see the poverty underneath. We know it's there. Barack Obama knows it's there. Hillary Clinton knows it's there. And John Edwards, though he not be in the race any longer, recognized it more eloquently there than even the top two. So I'm worried about John McCain as president, and I just want to plead, whoever you support, whether you support Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, whether you used to support John Edwards or Dennis Kucinich, we have got to work hard in November. And let's not let what may well be a fight to the finish between Obama and Clinton in any way detract us from the goal at hand. I'll tell you, John McCain's going to be tough. I am this close, I am this tempted to go into the Virginia primary this Tuesday and vote for Mike Huckabee. I'm really tempted, I must say. I think Mike Huckabee would be very easy to beat in the fall. I do think the majority of Americans are not fundamentalist Christians. The majority of Americans do believe in evolution. The majority of Americans do believe in equal rights for all. The majority of Americans don't want to quarantine people with AIDS. You know, Huckabee, he's a very likable hater. He is. He's a very friendly person who wants to quarantine all gay people. Or at least all people with HIV. I might just vote for Huckabee. In fact, I looked into it, but I realized that if I vote, it'll be forever known that I voted in the Republican primary, and I don't want to ever vote in a Republican primary. I don't want that black mark on my name. But I'm tempted, because Obama or Clinton, either one is fine with me. Either one, it would be great for me. But I'm really, really worried about John McCain, and I'm worried about the people that are going to vote for John McCain. And if Obama wins, I am worried that they're going to talk about his experience versus John McCain's. John McCain, though, is getting up there in age. Most people don't realize that he's already older than Ronald Reagan was when we elected him as our oldest president in American history. The man is 71 years old. He'll be 72 by November. If he's elected for 8 years, he'll be 80 by the time he leaves office. And I'm not attacking people of that age except to say that, well, Ronald Reagan got Alzheimer's. You know, he was out of it in his last years in office. And we do need a president with vigor and one that represents, I think, the newer generation. I think that's something that Obama brings. One thing that's interesting to me, though, with all the reason that it's a tie, is because Democrats believe in proportional representation. What that means is that our votes count. And there's something to be said, something wonderful about that. I persuaded a number of people in my home state of Tennessee to vote for Barack Obama. And that was, I don't know, maybe I persuaded 50 people, maybe 100 that I know told me I did. That hopefully I persuaded some of you folks. But that almost assuredly came down to another delegate in Tennessee, maybe two. Well, maybe not two. But it could have made the difference in a delegate. And it's just nice to know with proportional representation that your votes are counted. For the Republicans, of course, John McCain rarely topped 40% of the vote. Usually he would win 36 to 33 to 27. And in some of the states, that meant winner take all, which meant that for the Republicans, more than two-thirds of them, more than 60% of them at times, would be completely disenfranchised. Kind of interesting to see them screaming about it. It's very interesting, as we watch the Republican Party fall apart into the three pillars of the Republican Party. You have the military establishment, the war hawk crowd, that's the John McCain crowd. You have the fundamentalist Christians, the take us back before the Scopes Monkey trial, the we must teach prayer in schools, we must require everyone to be Christian, we must make sure the gay people have no rights. That's, of course, the Mike Huckabee crowd. And then you have the get rich richer crowd, the crowd that wants to tax the poor to pay for the rich, the one that wants to make sure that secretaries pay a higher tax rate than CEOs, and that was Mitt Romney, who, by the way, seems to be getting out of the race. No real surprise, I guess. He wants to run another day. Frankly, I'm glad that either Huckabee or Romney were getting out of the race. I'd like to see the conservatives combine. I'd like to see them beat John McCain, because I'm worried about John McCain. I think Romney or Huckabee would be quite easy to beat. Maybe I shouldn't be telling the Republicans who listen to the show the truth, but the truth is, you know, go Limbaugh, go Coulter, to the extent they can stop John McCain. I do fear, though, that they're helping John McCain. Maybe that's their intent. Maybe they're smarter than I give them credit for. Because by attacking John McCain from the right, they do make him seem more moderate than he is. And John McCain is someone who will keep us spending trillions of dollars on a needless war in Iraq. He's someone who will appoint judges that will take away constitutional rights. The fact that the man doesn't support the torture of the Bush administration or respects the Constitution more than the Bush administration means nil. That is the lowest bar in the world. If George Bush is on a 1 to 10 scale of constitutional rights is negative 8, and John McCain is simply a 1, that's not much better. That's not much better. So wherever you go, whatever you do, whomever you support in this Democratic race, you got to come home in November. You're going to be hearing me say this a lot over the next 10 months or so. That being said, I do want to encourage you to call in today to tell me if you voted on Super Tuesday, if so, who you voted for, if not, when is your state's primary, what are you thinking about, who you're thinking about voting for, and what your thoughts are on this race, or any other topic that comes to mind. It is the Week in Review, whether it be the fact that the CIA finally admitted to torture, or the fact that our Attorney General can't tell us what torture is. Whatever it is, give us a call, 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95? Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It wasn't exactly planes, trains, and automobiles on Head On with Bob Kincaid.
This is what the Bush administration Justice Department didn't want you to see back in 2001. They took out and they huffed the marker a little bit, and then they went, oh, cool. And they wiped out the name where it says, the plane was chartered either by the Saudi Arabian royalty family or Osama bin Laden. Somebody's got to call up and say, good afternoon. Thank you for calling Ryan International Flights. How may I help you?
Hello. This is Osama bin Laden, and I would like to rent a Boeing 727. Do you have one handy?
Oh, just a moment. Let me check. It's a Mr. bin Laden wants to know if we got a 727. Do we, Harry, do we have a 727?
Yeah, we got a 727 just sitting there on the lot. Going cheap.
There's nothing here. Nothing to look at. Keep moving. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The, you know, the 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine and the white robes.
Somebody's trying.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, weeknights, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, only on the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black. And if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. So what is the result of Super Tuesday? Well, one way to look at it is simply to look at the number of people who voted. And these numbers may surprise you. Hillary Clinton got 7.2 million votes. Barack Obama got 7.1 million votes. Almost a tie. 50.4% for Clinton, 49.6% for Obama. Compare this to how many votes John McCain got. He got 41% of the popular vote. He got 3.5 million ballots. That's right. Both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama each got more than twice the number of votes of the Republican frontrunner. Got it? Four, you could take McCain's voters and multiply them by four times, and you wouldn't get Clinton's and Obama's voters together. Add in Mitt Romney's 2.8 million and Mike Huckabee's 1.7 million. Add in all the Republican ballots, and you barely squeak more than one of the two Democratic candidates got. It is our year, my friends. It is our year. George Bush has dug such a deep hole. America is looking to the Democrats for solutions. We are excited. We can't decide which one we like better. The Republicans can't decide which one they hate worse. Let's not forget February when it comes to November, because I'm concerned. Whether it be Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, they're going to swift boat the heck out of us. They're going to swift boat the heck out of us. They're going to put all forward all kinds of lies about the Democratic nominee. Let's not forget February when it comes to November. Gene from Oregon, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
On.
How are you, sir?
Oh, I guess okay. We haven't had our primary yet. That doesn't come until May.
Huh, well, you may actually get a chance for once.
Yeah,
your primary may matter.
Yeah, I might this time, so I'm going to go down in the next couple of days and switch my affiliation back to Democrat.
Yeah, well, the Republican race will clearly be over by May, and John McCain will have won it.
Well, I just do that because we have a close primary here, and I want to pick my Democrat, and then I want to go back to being an independent until my vote gets counted. sorry.
Well, you're afraid your vote isn't counted when you're a Democrat?
Well, I'm kind of something like that. I mean,
what's your ballot system in Oregon? Do you have a paper record or not?
It's an optical scan.
Okay, well, that's good. That's a good thing, because then there's a paper record of your vote. So that's a really good thing.
Yeah, but still, he's a little nervous. But anyway, what I was going to say to you was, when you talked about voting for Mr. Huckabee, is I had seen something on the Super Tuesday news releases about McCain giving Huckabee some of his delegates in West Virginia.
Yeah, no, I'll tell you what happened in West Virginia. Bob may know more, though it's the Republicans. Well, what happened was the Republicans had a caucus, and I don't know how the Republicans choose the people in their caucus, but I know there were less than 2,000 people in the room. And when you think about it, 2,000 people in the entire state of West Virginia is a very small number. I guess they have a convention is what you call it. But here's what they did. They had a vote, and they all voted, and of the four Republican candidates running, Ron Paul got the fewest votes. He got under 15%. So they threw Ron Paul out, and then they went to the top three, McCain, Romney, and Huckabee. And in that vote, Romney got the most, Huckabee got second, and McCain got third. So Romney didn't have quite 50%. He had like 44% or something, and Huckabee had 30-something, and McCain had about 15%. So they threw McCain out because it's winner-take-all in the West Virginia Republican caucus, or convention, I guess, the better name for it. So there was two left. And so McCain supporters threw their votes to Huckabee, who was behind Romney, because they felt that Romney was a bigger threat to McCain than Huckabee was. So they threw their votes to Huckabee, and even though he was second in the first round and second in the second round, in the last round, he came in first because the McCain voters threw it to him, and that made Romney pretty upset. So that's what happened in West Virginia.
Well, it's very interesting because, you know, I call back home to Michigan, and I also talk to a few people here. And in Michigan, of course, they're mostly Romney fans back there on the Republican side because he was
right.
His father was the governor of the state.
Right.
But I've noticed that I'm thinking it's going to be Hillary versus McCain, and I'm being a pessimist.
I don't know which Democrat it's going to be. I really don't. It will be John McCain. But I think Obama can very much take this race. Do not count him out. It's now, of course, Michigan and Florida, the Republicans and the legislatures of those two states messed everything up in our party, which kind of upsets me that they can do that. And you know, part of me, I mean, I'm an Obama supporter and I respect the rules, but part of me thinks you got to give Michigan and Florida Democrats a voice. You got to give them a voice. So what are you going to do? I mean, the rules are just all messed up. I think actually the fairest thing to do is to hold a caucus in Michigan and Florida. You know, punish them. Do it at the end. Do it in June. But you can't give them no delegates. I mean, that's, I guess, where I agree with Hillary Clinton. I think you got to give the people a voice. Now, she wants the vote in the primaries to count. Of course, she does. Obama wasn't even on the ballot in Michigan, and she won very handily in Florida. But you can't ignore those states. My fear, my real fear, and it's not a pro-Obama or pro-Clinton fear, my fear is that those delegates will make the difference at the convention, and there'll be a huge, ugly floor fight. And I just don't want ugliness in our party. I don't care who wins. I just don't want ugliness because I don't want people to sit home and be upset. That's my concern.
Well, yeah, that's fine, too. And I'm thinking because from what I heard the day before I left the house, Florida said there was no way they were even going to think about doing a caucus because that would mean that their party would have to pay for it, the local Democratic Party.
Well, that's probably true. I mean, it's all the legislature's fault. You know, the Republican legislature of both states did it just to stick an eye in the Democrats, you know, a finger in our eye, because they set the date for the primary. and the Democrats decide what delegates are counted. We have the weirdest, if hopefully this season will get us to reform the stupidest possible way of choosing our president. I don't mind that it goes state by state, but it could be orderly. We may need, frankly, a federal law. You can't have these state legislatures leapfrogging over each other. We might as well have the 2012 races in, you know, in 2010. We can't keep having this. We've got to have an orderly system. And my view is, I mean, I have my own plan. Other people have different plans. My plan says that you pick four states from four regions in the country, much like Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada. But they get to go first this year. Next year, you pick, you know, Connecticut and Kansas.
Regional plan, then.
In Alabama and New Mexico. You pick four other smallish states of the four regions. And you do it orderly. And you change it each year because, you know, I mean, I have no disrespect for the good people of Iowa and New Hampshire, but I think people of other small states can handle it. I don't think that they're unique. I don't think they're better citizens than the rest of us. I'd like my own chance to have the candidates in my living room and have a chance to talk with them. I'm sure you would as well. It's completely wrong, unfair system, and it's crazy. And, you know, Super Tuesday happened simply because that was the earliest date that all the states could do it without being penalized. And so that's why they all did it. And it's, you know, I don't believe in a national primary. I don't think it's good. I think we should do it the old system, state by state, but do it orderly in a way probably controlled by the federal government. So let me ask you this. Yeah, go ahead. Well, I'm just going to ask you, you have until May, but who are you leaning toward? Is it Obama or Clinton for you?
Oh, I'm leaning toward Obama simply because I have a lot of well, I shouldn't say a lot, but I have some Republican friends that they absolutely hate Hillary. I find it very fascinating because the same people that hate Hillary also hate McCain.
Right. No, that's true. But are they going to consider pulling the lever for Obama? I don't think so. I don't think so. Now, hopefully they'll stay home. You know, if Rush Limbaugh stays home and his ilk... Terrific. I'd like to just, in fact, I'd rather just ship them on a boat out to sea. we could just ship them to, well, I don't know what nation I hate enough to send them to, but I'd rather they just leave the country. But at least if they'll stay home and not interfere with the, you know, thinking citizens of America, that's a plus for us.
Oh, yeah, that would be a plus, but I don't think we're going to get that lucky.
That's why I wonder about the Hillary hate, because none of them can seem to specify why. Why do they hate Hillary? I know why some people on the left are concerned about Hillary Clinton. You don't have to explain that to me. But why do people on the right hate Hillary Clinton so? And the only thing I can think is that they think she's a good politician, just like her husband Bill, and he beat them in a number of battles, and they're afraid of that. I don't know why they hate Hillary.
I honestly think it's actually kind of brainwashing. You know, I've talked to this friend of mine, and he really doesn't give me a satisfying answer. Now, he actually does like Obama. He thought Obama was great, but I think you know he is a movement conservative. So
I'll tell you this. I'm going to stick with you. You listen to the Horn regularly. I'm going to ask you as November comes closer. I'd be willing to bet a lot of money, dollars to donuts, as we say. I'd be willing to bet a lot of money that your friend who likes, your mainstream conservative friend who says good things about Obama now, by September he'll be calling Obama a terrorist. By September he'll be saying Obama is the worst, most dangerous, most awful man in the United States. Because what's fascinating to me is that most of the Hillary haters, and again, I'm not talking about the people on the left, I'm talking about the people on the right. Most Hillary haters on the right, I talk to them all the time, and they say, oh, I hate Hillary, I don't trust her, she's terrible. And I say to them, why? And they never cite a policy reason. They never say, oh, because of her health care proposal in 93. I would respect them if they said that. That is a reason. It's not a reason I share, but it is a reason they could suggest. They never do that. They just say, well, she's shifty or she's political or whatever. They never give a real reason. And the thing is, I think you're right. They've been tricked by this whole negative campaign, and they're going to do the same negative campaign against Obama. And I'm just afraid that one of the reasons why they don't hate Obama as much is because they haven't had the chance to hear that negative campaign yet.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. Well, I am going to let you go, but I hope Obama can make it, but I fear a McCain presidency is almost, well, I'll give it an 85% chance.
Oh, please. Oh, don't jinx us now. Don't jinx us now, Gene. But I'll tell you this. What you've done is show how much work we have yet to do. We have a lot of time. It's heady now. It's fun to talk because, you know, Clinton or Obama, good versus good. It's fun to talk about that now. But we have got our work cut out for us in November. We have all got to come together. We got to get those young people out, the same ones that are voting for Obama now, if it is him or if it's her. Either way, we're going to need them. And when I come back from break, I want to talk about a bill that passed in Congress that got very little attention. It's part of the Help America Vote Act that makes it very, very hard for young people to vote. And I want you to think about why Republicans don't want to make it easy for young people to vote. Thank you very much for your call, Gene. I appreciate it. Folks, if you want to call in too, it's easy to do. Pick up the phone and talk with me. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back.
This is the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn.
Now I lay me down to sleep.
I pray thee, Lord, my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake.
Across Appalachia, children pray at night. Coal companies are destroying Appalachia with 3 million pounds of high explosives per day. Take a stand. Go to CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. Be part of the solution so you and they can sleep at night. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net.
The trains are rolling by and I can feel the ground rumbling.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. With all the attention on Super Tuesday and then the tornadoes, one big story has slipped through almost unnoticed, and that's a not-too-subtle shift by our spy masters about the alleged threat from Iran. Remember, back in the fall, the NIE said Iran didn't have a nuclear weapon, didn't have an active nuclear weapons program, and probably couldn't manufacture such a weapon until the year 2015. Bush and Cheney weren't happy about that, since they're intent on using the image of a nuclear-armed Iran to justify the bombing they're chomping on the bit to conduct. So trying to get back in line with the boss, the Director of National Intelligence, Mike McConnell, testified to the Senate on Tuesday that maybe he overstressed the fact that Iran had halted its nuclear weapons work. And maybe he overplayed, he said, the fact that Iran doesn't know how to design a nuclear weapons just yet. And maybe he should have highlighted the fact that Iran was still enriching uranium, he said, or that Iran still poses a potential nuclear threat. In retrospect, he said, I do some things differently, like give Bush and Cheney exactly what they asked for. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Don't touch that mouse. Strictly Confidential is LGBT radio. 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head-On Radio Network.
Many colors in the homo rainbow. Don't be afraid to let your color shine. Many colors in the homo rainbow. Show me yours, I'm gonna show you mine.
The Appalachian Mountains are being blown up so we can keep the lights on. Over half of U.S. electricity comes from coal, and mountaintop removal coal mining has destroyed over 470 of our mountains so far and buried over 1,000 miles of streams. If we don't stop the coal companies, there won't be anything left, because coal is the biggest contributor to global warming. But we are fighting back, and this March we will converge for Mountain Justice spring breaks in two heavily coal-affected states. For more info, you can visit mjsb.org, mjsb.org.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. The media has dissected Super Tuesday. They have told us what black voters did, what white voters did, what young voters did, what older voters did. And I think to some extent, we should give Bill Clinton a bit of a pass. Yes, he shouldn't have mentioned Jesse Jackson in the South Carolina primary, but honestly, every single pundit from here to Sunday, Democrat, Republican, local, national, talks about the black vote and the white vote and the young vote and the old vote. Bill Clinton tries to talk about it, and he's accused of racism. That's a little over the top. But there is a distinction. Not the distinction between white women and blacks. I get that. And I don't think even that – I don't think blacks are anti-Clinton. I don't think women – white women are anti-Obama in any way, shape, or form. I just think that there is a little bit of identity politics going on, and that's okay. I can understand the excitement of African-Americans about the first real chance of having someone who's half black become president of the United States. I can understand the excitement among women about the idea of breaking the ultimate of glass ceilings. I get that. I get that. And when you have two candidates who are so close on the issues, I blame it even less. Now, if the candidates were very different on the issues, well, first of all, I wouldn't have such a hard choice. I wouldn't have a very clear choice. And then I would say people shouldn't vote based on identity politics. One of the silliest ideas of identity politics occurred way back in 1991 when some African-Americans wrongly, very wrongly, supported Clarence Thomas for the Supreme Court because they felt, well, he's an African-American. Maybe he's just pretending to be a right-wing nut. Maybe he's just pretending to be awful and opposing civil rights and anti the Constitution. Maybe he really will support us because he's black. Well, they learned the hard way that they should have voted, well, voted is the wrong word. They should have supported a Supreme Court nominee based on his or her views, not based on his or her color. But when you get to Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, they are so close. Frankly, when you push, I mean, on some things, as I said, I've supported Hillary Clinton. I like her health care proposal better. I actually think that Social Security, I like Barack Obama willing to make people in the upper echelons pay for it, but I dislike his talk about saying that we need a big fix, because I don't think we need a big fix. But they're little, tiny details. And so some people are voting on identity. One thing, one clear distinction, though, it's not based on race or gender. It's based on age. And what's interesting is that that distinction is probably more profound than race or gender. If you look at the difference among men and women in voting for Obama or Clinton, or the difference among white people in voting for Obama or Clinton, the difference among the age matters more. The younger you get, let's face it, the more likely you are to vote for Obama in the Democratic Party. The older you are, the more likely you are to vote for Clinton in the Democratic Party. I am concerned that people who are racist and sexist will vote for McCain in the fall. But let's talk about this age distinction for a minute. One of the reasons why I came down on Obama's side, and what I've said many times, the close decision, is because there's something to be said for the future. There's something to be said for moving on, for trying, as he says, to get past the 90s, even though much of the 90s, most of the 90s, was not the Clinton's fault. And yet, there's a concern. And it's one that a friend of mine bluntly put to me as she described why she's going to vote for Clinton. She thinks that Hillary is more electable than Barack. She says, because young people don't vote. And she's got a point. People over 60, people over 65 vote sometimes two or three times the rate of people, voters under 30. And what you may not know is that the Republican Party has forced through legislation to make it even more difficult for young people to vote. Recognizing, I think, that young people are the engines of change and that most of them are very upset watching their colleagues go and fight and die and get wounded in a war that has no purpose, knowing that they have to pay far, far more taxes because of the massive debt of the Bush administration. Young people support gay rights. They support African-American civil rights. They support equality of men and women. Young people are much more likely to be for the Democratic Party. And so the Republicans put in place something in the Help America Vote Act that does what it can to stop America from voting. The ostensible purpose is to prevent fraud. Now, no Republican has ever been able to find an example. I'm sure there may be one in the several hundred million people that have voted in America in the course of many years, but they can't seem to even find one example of someone who voted on someone else's name. But because they're so concerned about that, they say, they have a requirement that if it's your first time to vote after you register, you have to show up with a picture ID. Now, homeless people don't have a picture ID. We do not have a requirement that everybody drive. Not everyone has a driver's license. Not everyone has a car in America. The people under bridges don't, and they don't have an ID. So they can't vote. Social Security card? Sorry, you can't vote. Well, that locks the poor out. But it also locks a number of young people out. When I was in college, I grew up in Tennessee. I considered myself a Tennessee resident. But I went up to Boston, Massachusetts for 4 years in college. And while up there, I didn't want to vote in Massachusetts. Partly, I admit, because Massachusetts votes, you know, usually for blue. And I wanted a state that could go red or blue. But I kept my registration in Tennessee, and I was allowed to vote absentee. No more. You are allowed to vote absentee if you voted before. So all those old people will be, they'll be able to vote easily. And if you're in the military, the Republicans made sure that you can vote easily. But if you're young and you're not in the military and you're in college, you're going to have a really hard time. It's practically impossible for you to vote in your home state. What are you going to do? Spend hundreds of dollars on a plane ticket to go home just to vote? Nah. Republicans are quite confident you're not going to do that in November. And if you registered while you were in high school, when you were 18, if you registered, well, your registration won't be valid in your college state. And plus, where's your college state? More likely to be in already blue territory, Massachusetts or California. Look where the colleges are. I mean, many more people leave the red states to go to college in the blue states than leave the blue states to go to college in the red states. So by preventing young people, liberal young people, from voting in their home state, unless they're in the military, in which case it's okay, the Republicans are very quietly disenfranchising probably millions of Democratic voters. Have you noted that nobody's talking about this? Nobody. I mean, I talk about it. I'm sure other people on the horn will. But the mainstream media hasn't caught on to it yet. Here's my fear. My fear is come November 10th, after a squeaking John McCain victory, that people will then hear all the young people that tried to vote, tried to get absentee ballots, were not allowed to get absentee ballots because they don't show up in person with picture ID. And then people will say, oh, I guess the Republicans really did swing the election, not in 08, but in 02 and 03 and 04 when they got the Help America Vote Act, which should be called the Keep Liberals from Voting Act, through Congress. The time to talk about it is now. And if you do know someone who's a first-time voter, most of them will be young people, you've got to encourage them to register in a place where they live. And even that's hard. I mean, I had a Tennessee driver's license, and I was in Massachusetts. I don't know whether the Massachusetts people would have accepted my Tennessee driver's license. I guess they would have. But please, if you're listening to my vote, to my voice, and it's your first time to vote, call your registrar. Find out now the requirements. Don't wait till October, and certainly don't wait till November. And please pass the word around. We've got to get the word around Facebook and MySpace and all the ways that young people communicate. God, I want to send a text message to a billion of them because they all seem to have text messages on their phones. Check the requirements now. Don't let the Republicans prevent young people from voting. It would be worse than a shame if young people managing the millions to come out for Obama and push him over the top, but then when many more people vote in the fall, I mean, let's face it, I'm very proud of the 14 million that voted for Democrats yesterday, but add that to the 7 million Republicans, that's 20 million. It's still, and it's half the states, double it. It's still far less than the 100 plus million that vote on Election Day. I'm really concerned about the people, the young people, who will vote, try to vote for the first time and be turned away at the polls. We need to get the word out. Toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. When we come back, I'm going to talk about our Attorney General before the House Judiciary Committee today defending torture in America. Right back after this.
This is the Head-On Radio Network.
This is Bill O'Brien with a message that pretty much defines Concord University. It's from Emily Dickinson. There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any courses like a page of prancing poetry. This traverse may the poorest take without oppressive toll. How frugal is the chariot that bears a human soul. Respect for learning, a mission to deliver education that touches souls, consideration to what students can afford, career rewards that pay dividends far beyond the dollars earned. At Concord, we've never crossed that important line between the business of education and education as a business. The first is extremely serious. It changes lives and connects with the moral and the spiritual. We're good at that. The second is no less serious. It raises ethical concerns, however. We avoid that. Concord University, the frugal chariot that bears human souls. Call the Concord Admissions Office, 1-888-384-5249.
Everybody comes to Rick's.
If he can stand it, I can. Play it.
Howdy, Rangers. Tune into Rick's Place. You'll be fascinated with porn psychotherapist Rick Goodner's take on all of today's political issues from a real Texan's liberal point of view. So mosey on into Rick's Place for some good old hospitality with Rick Goodner. See you there, Rangers, this Saturday, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
And if you want another kind of love, I wear a mask for you. If you want a partner, open my hand. If you want to strike me down in anger, here I stand. If I'm your man.
Don't miss Rick's Place with Rick Goodner. Part of the weekend lineup on The Horn, running all weekend in rotation with The Showers Report and Night Sounds.
Everyone loves listening to music, but have you ever stopped to think about why it's great for kids to learn to play music? Hi, I'm Darius Rucker from Hootie the Blowfish. These days it seems people focus way too much on the economics of school music instead of an amazing positive effect it has on kids. It's such a thrill for a child when he or she gets the first instrument or masters a simple part on the flute or performs a showstopper with a school chorus. And there's so much music out there to play and listen to. When kids learn to appreciate a show tune, a Beethoven symphony, or an opera, in addition to what they hear on the radio, it only opens their young minds to the diversity of the world around them. Make sure your kids learn to love music. Support your school music program.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore Americans' voice through music education. March is Music in Our Schools Month.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Bob Kincaid was just telling me that he's got two first-time voters in his family, and he wanted to know if it would apply in the hills and hollers of West Virginia, and the answer is absolutely it will. This is a federal law. Let me repeat the law. I'll make sure you know it, and I'd like you to tell as many people as you can about it, anyone who's a first-time voter. If you are voting for the first time in your life, or many times, even if it's the first time after you've moved, just because you've moved to a new state, you're still a first-time voter. You have to show a picture ID to vote. Now, the regulation is very tricky. You don't have to show a picture ID to register. So many people will go along and register and not realize that there's a problem because, heck, you just fill out the form at your post office and you think it's okay. This is from the Motor Voter Bill that the Democrats passed in the late years of the Clinton era. They passed the Motor Voter Bill to make it easier for people to register and vote. Republicans didn't like that. They want to make it harder for you to vote. And so they require the first time you vote in your new jurisdiction to show up with a picture ID. The fact that some Americans don't have a driver's license doesn't seem to concern them. So what's going to happen is people who think they're registered, who think everything's okay, maybe if it were Bob's kids, they registered in West Virginia but attend college in another state, and they go and they try to vote absentee in October before the election, and they get a letter from the registrar, "Oh, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to vote absentee. You thought you were an American citizen. You thought you were a registered voter, and you are a registered voter and American citizen, but you're second class. you see, because you're a first-time voter, because you're a kid, because we think you can vote for the Democratic Party. Sorry, the registrar will say, the law is the law, and you got to have a picture ID. So please be careful where you register. Register a place where you have a picture ID. I do think that, and I'll have to check this, but I do think you can show a picture ID from another state. I think if you you're from Tennessee and you're in Massachusetts, you should be able to show a Tennessee driver's license. But the main thing is to check your requirements. And if enough people bug their registrar, maybe they can push. I'd love to see the Democratic Congress, for example, revise this law. And if Bush vetoes it, he vetoes it, but it would make it plain for the world to see. Unfortunately, they're busy fighting about other things. One of the things they're fighting about, of course, is torture. You had the Attorney General, Mukasey, appear before the House Judiciary Committee with one of my heroes, Chairman John Conyers, asking him tough questions. And John Conyers can be blunt. It's one of the things I like about him. And he bluntly said, are you going to seek criminal sanctions against those that committed waterboarding? You see, the CIA has finally admitted, after playing cute for many, many, many years and refusing to respond to the Democrats and not being asked to respond by the Republicans, they finally admitted that, yes, of course they tortured people. Well, but they're not sure the techniques are torture, right? Remember the memo from my evil twin, my law school roommate, not roommate, please, my law school classmate, John Yoo, who drafted a memo that said that if you don't damage any bodily organs, it's not torture. In fact, one of the things that just came out recently was John Yoo was asked in a conversation that was, I guess, off the record, but has become on the record. In any case, the story is going around, and I believe it to be true, that John Yoo was said, what if it's not the person themselves? What if the government takes the person's child, and excuse the graphicness of what I'm about to describe, what if the government takes the person's child and crushes the child's testicles? Would that be torture? To which John Yoo responded, well, technically no, because you're not damaging that person's organs. That is the government's position. That was the government's position until it was overturned by the Supreme Court. We don't know what other torture that has been allowed. It's only because people have focused on waterboarding that we finally find out years later, and only under the determined oversight of Democratic leaders like John Conyers, that the CIA, yes, practiced waterboarding. A technique, let's be clear, that has been punished as torture in the United States of America since the 19th century. In the Spanish-American War in 1898, Americans took Spaniards, I guess, and subjected them to waterboarding, subjected them to almost drown, to almost kill them in order to get information. Those Americans, our soldiers, were punished for having tortured an enemy of war. And now, more than 100 years later, this technique, which, by the way, dates back to the Spanish Inquisition. I guess there's a certain, I don't know, certain ironic rough justice in the fact that it started in the Spanish Inquisition and continued in the Spanish-American War. Way to go, Spain! But this technique continues into the third millennium. The CIA has done it, and the president has made clear that they're going to do it again. And when Chairman John Conyers asked the Attorney General of the United States, are you going to seek criminal sanctions? Mukasey bluntly said, no. No. John Conyers, it's a very simple question. Are you going to start a criminal investigation into, not whether it was done, we know it was done, into whether the confirmed use of waterboarding by the United States was illegal? No, I am not. No, I am not. He said that the Justice Department, way to go, John Yoo, had authorized this torture. And because the Justice Department authorized it, he wasn't going to check and see whether it was legal or not. Got it? Got it? like when we rounded up all the Japanese. Well, our government authorized it, therefore, ipso facto, it wasn't illegal. Right? Secret prisons, extraordinary rendition, sending innocent people abroad to be beaten with cables as we sent Maher Arar to Syria. The government authorized it. Therefore, by definition, it's not illegal. I want you to think about what that means. I want you to think about really what that means. Think how would it apply to Kim Jong-il or Saddam Hussein, or for that matter, Joseph Stalin, Adolf Hitler. You pick a government, and I will tell you that any government that says anything we authorize is by definition legal, that government is tyranny. That so-called government is a dictatorship. We are supposed to live in a country of checks and balances. We are supposed to live in a country where not everything the government does is legal by definition. Mukasey did not defend the practice. He did not say the practice would stop. He did not say why they hadn't told us whether why they had done this torture or whether they'd done this torture for years and years. No. He wouldn't defend the practice. He merely said it was legal when we did it. Not by law. Remember, we signed Geneva Conventions that prohibit torture. We have the Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. No, the law prohibited it. The Constitution prohibited it. Treaties prohibited it. But George Bush said it was okay. Or, more accurately, his clever lawyers, who really aren't that clever. I mean, I can say black is white and night is day. I can say, as George Orwell did, freedom is slavery, war is peace, ignorance is strength. I can call the Department of War the Department of Defense. It's very easy to call something the opposite of what it is. The Supreme Court in Bush v. Gore said they were counting every vote in the exact same opinion in which they refused to count every vote. The emperor has no clothes. I know many of you wonder why I invite a Republican like Mike Lane on my show every week or two. It's partly because I want to see how he can respond to questions like these. I want to see whether a Republican will say that just because the government says it's right, does that make it right by definition? What kind of country do we live in where the government says, I am the law? Louis XIV once gave the famous quote, L'État, c'est moi. In English, the state, it's me. But you can go back a lot farther than Louis XIV. You can go back to the pharaohs of ancient Egypt who claimed they were divine, who claimed that whoever sat on the throne was a descendant of Ra, the sun god, and had to be obeyed. The idea that a political / religious leader is infallible is hardly unique to the United States. It's hardly unique to this time in history. I had just hoped, prayed, thought, and believed that we were past that time. And we have to work hard to elect, whether it be Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, to elect a Democrat in November, to finally restore America to a place where the people rule, to a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, and get rid of this dictatorship and tyranny that has managed to rule over us for the last 8 years. That's all for the Inside Scoop. Tune in next week. This is Mark Levine signing off.